You're listening to Kilometre Zero by the Cycling Podcast.
Late Saturday, a unique day on the Tour de France, the only day they hold two races. The chatter prior to the team time trial was about the fortunes of the Tour's first American team in general, and yellow jersey Alex Stida in particular. When Stida took off on his one-man breakaway in the previous race, no one saw him as a threat, but the joke was on everyone else.
You're listening to Kilometre Zero by the Cycling Podcast. This is the final part of our mini-series remembering the 1986 Tour de France with me, Lionel Burney. In 1986, the 7-Eleven team became the first American squad to ride the Tour de France, the biggest example yet of the Tour opening its doors to the world in an effort to create new markets. In his later years at the helm, the Tour boss, Félix Levitin, was driven by a desire to commercialise the Tour. In 1981, Jonathan Boyer had become the first American rider to start the Tour, and he was encouraged by Levitin not to wear his Renault team jersey, but the Stars and Stripes instead, even though he wasn't the American road race champion at the time. Levitin also dreamed of a Grand Départ in New York one day. Anyway, the 7-Eleven team had ridden the Giro d'Italia in 1985, and they'd done very well. Their best rider, Andy Hampstead, won a short mountain stage, and that was a victory which caught the eye of the Lavie Claire super team, led by Bernard Hinault and Greg LeMond, of course. Earlier in 1986, 7-Eleven had been scheduled to ride the Vuelta a España, but they arrived in Palma in Mallorca for the start, just as international events were going to change the course of their season. The US had launched airstrikes on Libya, retaliation for a bombing at a disco in West Berlin 10 days previously, which President Ronald Reagan blamed on Libyan leader Colonel Gaddafi. Anyway, tensions were high between the US and Arabic countries as a result, and with Spain not all that far from North Africa, the US authorities advised the 7-Eleven team not to take part in the Vuelta. So that meant a change of programme and a place in the Tour de France. It also meant the team was relatively fresh, and so as the 10 riders lined up on the outskirts of Paris for the prologue time trial, 8 Americans, a Mexican, Raul Alcala, and a Canadian were about to make history. The Canadian was Alex Stida, who wore number 210, the lowest bib number in the race. And that meant he was the first rider to roll down the start ramp for the time trial, which meant he was guaranteed to lead the Tour de France for a minute or two at least. As it turned out, he did a pretty good time, but it was the following day that he wrote himself into Tour de France history, when he was top of the world in the morning and very nearly brought crashing down to earth in the afternoon. This is Alex Stida's story, 40 years after making history for Canadian cycling.
What a marvellous start we're having here. We're being treated to the sight of one of the North American riders, Alex Stida of Canada, out in front by a minute and 45 seconds. And this is a marvellous breakaway, and one, I must say, has come as something of a surprise.
My name is Alex Stida. I started cycling in 1977 as a junior after playing hockey, ice hockey, for many years. I started racing on the track and found initial success there. And then graduated to racing road. Started with the 7-Eleven amateur team in 81, and then quickly graduated through the ranks, went to the Olympics in 84, turned pro after that, joined the 7-Eleven pro team. The whole team turned pro after the Olympics. And then, yeah, Tour de France in 1986, my first Grand Tour, thrown into the deep end.
For the man who will begin this 73rd Tour, the time here at the starting line is spent fine-tuning the machines and the flesh and blood. 2.9 miles away at the finish line is my colleague Phil Liggett.
Well, here at the finish line of this opening prologue of the Tour de France, there's an indication of the great interest in the event. Over 500 journalists have already arrived. And the reason is that this prologue time trial may only be a shade under 3 miles, but it will give some indication as to who will lead the teams. The Tour de France essentially is a team race. There are 21 of them here, each one with 10 riders.
Well, I had number 210, so we were the last team, and I was the last guy on our team. So, of course, I started first, which was good because I had a chance to warm up on the course, because right before I started. It was basically a four-cornered square, like a criterium course. And I realized this was good for me. A, track rider, short, hard efforts. B, cornering fast, which I'd love to do. So I just went as hard as I knew that is something I could do well at. So I just went as hard as I could. Eventually, you know, I finished. I was the best rider. I was leading the Tour de France for like until the last 20 guys or so.
The standings after day one, Thierry Marie, a time trial specialist in first place and a key man on Laurent Fignon's team, which could make things very interesting. Eric Heidt in his first Tour de France, only 12 seconds back. In a race that had figured to be a showdown, all of the top riders were very close. The prologue winner, Thierry Marie, not on the wanted list of any of the top riders, but in yellow at least for now.
Yeah, you finished 21st, the best of the 7-Eleven team, 12 seconds down on Thierry Marie. And to put this into context, Thierry Marie was the specialist at these short time trials at the time in road cycling. The other riders up at the top there were also the guys that you would expect in this sort of short 4 or 5 kilometer effort. Eric van der Aarden, Bernard Hinault, of course, Jean-Luc Vandenbroucke, a Belgian rider who won loads of prologues. Greg LeMond, not that far ahead of you. He was in eighth. So a really, I mean, what a first day.
Yeah.
You've been a Tour de France rider for 5 minutes and 30 seconds or thereabouts, and it couldn't have gone any better, really.
It really couldn't have. You know, everything just worked out perfect. You know, it was just amazing that the team figured out all the logistics to get us to the start line and not miss our start times. You know, we didn't have rollers to warm up on, you know, or a trainer, right? We were just kind of rolling around, you know, outside of the start gate, you know, like trying to keep our legs going. You know, it was so rudimentary. Like, but of course, everyone was in the same boat. So you know, that night, looking at the race Bible, two stages the next day. There was an 80-ish K stage in the morning. And then the afternoon was a 60 K team time trial. I looked at the profile and the way that the race, the 80 K stage was structured. And there were, in 80 K, there were 4 time bonus sprints. Could you imagine that now? Back then, there was like 10 seconds, 6, 4, 2, right? So quite a bit of time. And I was only 12 seconds down.
I can actually tell you it was 12 seconds for first place at those sprints. Because in those days, it wasn't just the intermediate sprints for the time bonuses. There was also a red jersey for the sprints, intermediate sprints classification. They don't have that anymore. So yeah, lots of kind of racing opportunities which offered that kind of opportunity. So you were kind of two sprints away from something special, potentially.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I've always prided myself of not, you know, I know I'm not the strongest rider, but I always figure out a way. And I think you might call that ciclismo. Yeah, so I figured, well, okay, what's the best, you know, best case scenario? Well, it's an 80K stage. Really don't need any food, you know, so I don't need pockets in my jersey. So why don't I just wear my skin suit? I didn't tell my teammates. I'm not sure why. Maybe I was a bit embarrassed, but I showed up at the start with a skin suit. And I'm pretty sure that I may have been the first pro to wear a skin suit in a road race. Some others had raced them in time trials, but not in a road race. I'm waiting for someone to tell me I'm wrong. So,
well, certainly a flat road race. I know that Stephen Roach did it in a short mountain stage in the 85 Tour de France, but that was a short, like just mountain stage. But not. I can't think of anyone in a. This was like you say, it was like a big kermesse, really. You know,
yeah.
The stage went from Nanterre to Sceaux, which is basically two different parts of the outskirts of Paris to the sort of southwest, isn't it? So you hadn't gone too far out of Paris. And it was kind of flat, but with those sort of urban climbs, just draggy climbs, wasn't it?
Yeah, and there was mountain points actually on those climbs. Wasn't really thinking about that, but anyway, those time bonuses were everything. So after first 20K or so, I thought, this could be good. It's like it's a windy road. If I got it, you know, I could just sort of get out of sight. Well, who's going to let me go? So I touched the guy in front of me. It turned out to be Bernard Hinault, you know, like, and I was shocked as how skinny he was. Like it was like the skin on the hip bone. There was just nothing there. No fat. I was like, whoa. And he looked back and I said, oh, PC. He let me through. And I just sort of noodled off the front. Like I didn't, you know, like I didn't go out of the saddle attacking like a crazy, you know, idiot. I just sort of just tempoed off like I was going to go ahead and stop and have a pee.
And on a day that had already brought enough surprises, Canadian Alex Steeda came up with one more. Steeda, riding on the American 7-Eleven team, took off on a one-man breakaway. And no one followed.
As soon as we got around a turn and I looked back and I couldn't see the peloton, I knew they couldn't see me. So I just went as hard as I could. And I was gone. And of course, there's no race radios then. So by the time the moto with the chalkboard was able to catch up, get a time, go back to the peloton, I had like 3 minutes because they were just rolling. You know, yeah, first stage of the Tour de France, 80K, they're saving their matches for Team Town Trial, right? And I was gone.
What's in the mind of Alex Steeda as he leaves this 53-mile road race, far and away the shortest in the entire Tour de France? His first tour already put him in uncharted territory. And now a sign on a motorcycle tells him that at 1 minute 47 seconds ahead, he is technically in the yellow leader's jersey. And no North American rider has ever worn it.
And I rode through the two of the time bonus sprints. And then Mike Neal in the team car comes up beside. And Alex, he's a North Californian hippie. He's like, the guys are, there's a break coming. You got to get the next sprint. Keep going. I was like, yeah, I know. I'm keeping going. Don't worry. I took my hairnet off, threw it in the car. Not sure why.
Some quite nice blonde highlights I noticed on the video. You'd had your hair done just before the start of the tour, I think.
And Shelley Versus did that for us. She did our hair. Yeah, yeah. Bleached it out. So yeah, I kept going and I just buried myself to get the next time bonus sprint.
And the break is working away, and I do believe as we watch the result of a special sprint here for time bonuses, Steeda gets 12 more seconds. He'll want that because he's now won, in fact, three of these bonuses, giving him 36 seconds in theory. Steeda now is the overall leader of the Tour de France. He's wiped out his deficit, lost in the prologue time trial to Thierry Marie because of the bonus sprint. And I do believe, Paul, that he's now waiting for this group, and he may well feel he's done enough today just to get the yellow jersey.
And then the group, that breakaway caught me after that third time bonus sprint. It was Phil, and Phil Anderson was in the group. And he was racing for Panasonic at the time, but one of the only other English-speaking pros in the peloton at that time. And he, you know, he, as he went by, he touched my leg and said, "Hi, Alex, yeah, you're doing great. You're in yellow." I was like, oh, Jesus, Phil Anderson just spoke to me. So, yeah, we're all doing turns. And, of course, these guys are going for the stage win because they know that they're carrying the yellow jersey with them. And I realized if we got caught and Van der Rodden won the final sprint, the time bonuses were much bigger for the finish sprint. I couldn't quite do the math, but he could have overtaken me on GC by winning the final sprint because he was one of the best sprinters then, right? So my job, I realized, was to keep the breakaway from getting caught.
And now it's the Steeda here urging this group on, 210. He drops back, Anderson goes through, then Paul De Shore up. And Steeda anxious not even to let Guillou go through there. It takes his place third in the line. Guillou quite happy to sit at the back and profit by the necessity of the working of the others.
So as you know, what happens is guys, you know, with, you know, 10 or so K to go, guys start attacking the break and everyone sits, looks around. Oh, I'm not going to go. No, you go. And I realized my job was just to keep going, keep the brake moving. So I would go to the front and just drill it and do a tempo to bring back the guy who had just been caught. And of course, we catch that guy and the next guy goes. No one else is doing anything. All right, I guess I'll go to the front again. And I just drilled it to bring it back again. I did that four times.
5 kilometers to go. That's 3 miles. And this now looking a reality, not just for Zollefeld and Dernies at the front, but also, Paul, a real chance for a Canadian to be in yellow. Wouldn't that be marvellous?
Well, that'd be fantastic, really, for the North American countries, because I don't think a North American rider has ever worn the yellow jersey in the Tour de France. He's not too far back here. I think they're only 15 to 20 seconds behind at the moment, and all Stader has to do is stay with that group.
I'm sure he knows that now. I wonder what he's feeling like. I wonder if the adrenaline coursing through the veins there, he's got that tingling feeling on his arms and on his legs, thinking, I'm nearly there, I could be in yellow, and one yellow jersey will do me, and I'll take it home to Canada. There he is, the rider we're all talking about, and everybody here at the finish line is asking, how do you say the name Stider?
Finally, we get to the finish, and the break, we'd done enough to keep the break away, and I was able to just finish just at the back of the break.
Because Paul de Schora is the winner. A bank, he's had the ball there. It's Denez in second place. Zollefeld is third. Anderson will be fourth. And I think Sieda will just get fifth in the photograph as the bunch is led over.
But I'd done my job, keeping the breakaway away, so Van der Rohe couldn't win the race.
And that gave you the yellow jersey.
Yeah. Yeah, I had enough time at that point. I still wasn't sure because I was done. I was complete. That was like an 80K max effort. And it was the first stage of the Tour de France. Like, come on. And I was just sitting on the ground. And I remember Oach running up to me, Jim Okowitz, we nicknamed him Oach. And he just picks me up and gives me a hug. He says, Alex, you did it. You did it. You're in the yellow.
Some said Stida and his 7-Eleven American team were not even qualified to be here at the Tour. Team manager Jim Okowitz put the win into perspective.
I mean, this is like winning the Super Bowl for us. It's the biggest thing that we've ever done. It's the biggest thing that's ever happened to American cycling, and it's only the beginning of what's going to happen in the future in cycling.
There he
in the
is.
United States.
Alex Sieda punches the air, the first American, more correct than the first North American, because he's Canadian, riding for an American team. Alex Sieda puts on the most proudest symbol in the world of cycling, Le Maillot Jaune, for the first time.
It was all a blur. Like, I was up on the podium, being presented with, and I thought, oh, the yellow jersey. No, I got the white jersey because I was the best rookie. Then I was presented with the red jersey, which was, as you've mentioned, was the intermediate points jersey, which they don't have anymore. Then I was presented with the combination jersey, which they don't have anymore, which is a patchwork of all the different jerseys, the best points of all the jerseys. Then I was presented with the polka dot jersey because I'd gone through a couple of these small hills, and then finally got the yellow jersey. So I won 5 jerseys on that first day. Didn't win the green jersey, which was the final points jersey, because I didn't have any finish points. Fine. But I distinctly remember being on the podium with the yellow jersey on, you know, with the Velcro on the back. And I just had this kind of like shocked look on my face. And John Pierce, the photographer, you know, John, he yelled up, "Alex, smile!" I was like, "Oh, yes, yeah!" And then I broke out in a smile, like, you know, I realized how happy I, you know, should show how happy I was, if you will.
The yellow jersey is on your shoulders. What's it like to be the first American to wear it?
Well, I'm proud to be the first Canadian to wear the yellow jersey. Never mind the first American, but it's great to be, you know, with 7-Eleven, and without their support, I wouldn't be here, of course. But God, it feels great. God.
Phil Liggett interviewed me right after. And he said, "Aye, Alex, you're the first American to wear the yellow jersey." I said, "Phil, I'm Canadian." And then he coined the phrase, "Oh, you're the first North American."
This message is brought to you by the Capital One Venture X card. Venture X offers the premium benefits you expect, like a $300 annual Capital One travel credit for less than you expect. Elevate your earn with unlimited double miles on every purchase, bringing you one step closer to your next dream destination. Plus, enjoy access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. The Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details. Details. Brought to you by the Capital One Saver Card. With Saver, you earn unlimited 3% cash back on dining, entertainment, and at grocery stores. That's unlimited cash back on ordering takeout from home, or unlimited cash back on tickets to concerts and games. So grab a bite, grab a seat, and earn unlimited 3% cash back with the Saver Card. Capital One. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Late Saturday, a unique day on the Tour de France, the only day they hold two races. The chatter prior to the team time trial was about the fortunes of the Tour's first American team in general, and yellow jersey Alex Stida in particular. When Stida took off on his one-man breakaway in the previous race, no one saw him as a threat, but the joke was on everyone else. A cruel joke indeed for the man everyone thought would be the first North American to wear the yellow jersey.
Well, it's a rather real lucky break for them, because it's not a matter of really by strength that they took it. It's by luck because of the circumstances. But it's a good break for them. It's good.
It's a once-in-a-lifetime deal to wear the yellow jersey. It's incredible. Unbelievable. And for, oh, well, it's impossible to describe the magnitude of that accomplishment. Incredible. Le Mans never had a yellow jersey, and he's done the race twice, and he's the best cyclist in the world. It's amazing.
In the spotlight at race time, Canadian Alex Stida, who would lead the 10-man American team.
There's not an awful lot of time between the road stage and the team time trial, and you know, one of the things that struck me when you're talking about your attack and your effort, there's probably 200 of the guys in the peloton who were just thinking, there's a team time trial in the afternoon. That's a hard, intense effort. We're not talking about a short one either. It's 57K, I think. So we're talking an hour and a quarter's high intensity effort after you've just made a couple of hours of high intensity effort. Was there any kind of worry in your mind, that kind of doubt that you get, and that, oh, this is going to hurt?
Yeah. Well, you know, I was taking advantage of the opportunity of, you know, the being in the break. Okay. I got in the solo break, fine. And, you know, might as well, you know, make the most of it. Okay. But then, yeah, after it was a bit, I was a bit apprehensive, let's say. Okay. How is this team time trial going to work? We hadn't practiced it much at all. We didn't know the route. It wasn't a straight out and back, or, you know, there was twists and turns. You know, we didn't really know what it was like. The saving grace was we were the last team because I had yellow. So the yellow jersey team leaves last. So that gave us more recovery time. So that was good. But, you know, there were still, you know, photographers taking pictures. John Pierce did a great one. I was sitting on the cot with all the five jerseys, you know, draped over me. But yeah, it was definitely a unknown. And we, you know, in retrospect, the effort that I had made in the morning stage, plus the effort from Jeff Pierce and Chris Carmichael, who had been at the front of the peloton, sort of not really blocking, but, you know, disrupting chases, they had put out a lot of effort as well. So the three of us, we should never have taken a turn in the team time trial. We should have just been sitting at the back. But there was no instructions, so we all just rolled through, doing our turn, you know, as fast as we could. Whenever we got to the front, we hadn't practiced it, so we didn't really know what we were up for.
The 7-Eleven team have never ridden a team time trial with 10 men, and they need a good time to keep Alex Stida in his yellow jersey. The emphasis is on speed and coordination, and riders normally accustomed to sitting in the pack must take the lead.
At one point, we were rocking down a false flat descent, you know, 10 guys in a line going as fast as you can. everyone's kind of looking around. Okay, what's around the next turn? We see the lead motorbike making a left turn at a T intersection at the bottom of this false flat descent. Okay, left turn. We swing to the right. We turn left, but in the middle of that left turn on the road we turn onto was a traffic island. So it's either go to the left, hard left, or go to the outside on the right. And half the guys went to the inside, half the guys went to the outside, and Eric Heiden didn't make it, hit the curb, crashed, went down.
Eric Heiden has fallen, highlighting the dangers of riding with your own teammates in a tight formation that lacks coordination. The team has gone on, but Heiden, one of the strongest forces in the squad, leaves a question for the team to answer. Should they wait or should they leave him, remembering that only six need finish together?
We, you know, it's fairly early on in the event, so we all realized we had to wait and regroup and get going again. And at one point, we were in these trees, but as we came out of the trees, we hit a crosswind. And one of our, you know, the riders, Alexei Grewal, is, you know, a very strong climber, but not good at riding in an echelon. So he was leading at that point, and the wind was from the left, but Alexei was way off on the right. And, well, that didn't leave us with any draft. So we were all yelling, "Alexei, move left!" He didn't understand. So Doug Shapiro took the full water bottle out of his bike and threw it up our 10-man group and hit Alexei square in the back. And Alexei looked back, and he's a bit of a hothead and a temper. So he was started yelling and screaming at Doug, and we had this argument during the team time trial. Oh my God. There I am in a yellow skin suit, you know, just trying to like hang on.
It was now brutally clear that Alex Steeda's brief friendship with the Yellow Leaders jersey would not continue through the day. His bold breakaway in the 53-mile road race hours earlier had sucked the power from his legs, and Alex Steeda tried in vain to keep up with the team trying to protect the Golden Fleece.
At that point, you know, with about 20K to go, the writing was on the wall. We were going through these rollers. I couldn't hang on. Anytime there was an uphill, I just couldn't stay on the wheel. So Mike Neal came up and told Chris and Pep, Jeff Pierce, to drop back and get me to the finish. So we watched those guys ride away, and the three of us are doing bit and bit to try to drag ourselves back to the finish, try to make the time cut. And in team time trial, there was a time limit.
Steeda continued to falter and was now caught by the Peugeot team, who had started minutes later. At the finish line, six members of Team 7-Eleven finished together. They had sent two riders back to try and help Steeda stay in the race.
We didn't know how much. We didn't know where we were. We just went as hard as we could. We got to the finish, and we had just made the time cut by like 30 seconds. Yeah, it could have been a whole lot of different, you know, everything could have changed, you know, just, you know, truly one hit wonder by, you know, you have any yellow jersey in the afternoon and getting kicked off the Tour de France, you know, in the evening. But we made the time cut, and we were able to carry on the next day. But yeah, of course I lost the yellow jersey, which was, you know, very disappointing, but, you know, not, you know, unsurprising, let's say. We didn't have any aspirations of winning the team time trial, I think.
In 1 hour and 16 minutes, they had endured a crash, four flat tires, and lost the yellow jersey.
Well, let's put this into a little bit of context, because as I say, 56, 57 kilometre distance, an afternoon stage after a race in the morning, 10 riders in a team time trial. I mean, from just a technical point of view, that is hard. The line is long. Just keeping the rotation smooth is difficult. As you say, if the wind's coming from the side and you really are not experienced at knowing how to ride in those conditions, basically Alexei Grewal there, or whoever it is on the front, if they're not hugging the curb on the extreme side into the wind, they're putting the rest of you in, you know, in difficulty because there's nowhere to shelter. And as you say, Eric Heiden crashed. I think I saw on the footage there was at least one puncture where the rear wheel gets swapped from a disc to a regular wheel. So, you know, a fair few mitigating circumstances here. I think you had four punctures in total in the team in on that particular stage. And then, yeah, the sight of the yellow jersey getting dropped in a team time trial. Now, you would think these days everyone would stop, wait, and nurse them to the line. But you couldn't afford to do that because of the time cut. And I think it was a little bit less nip and tuck. I think it was about 49 seconds you got in time. But riders got eliminated that day. Café de Colombia, who finished last, lost four riders. That was it. Day two of the Tour de France, and they're down to six because of the team time trial. So it could very easily have happened. I mean, you know, pretty heroic just to get to the line and save your Tour de France. Because like you say, it could have been, you know, an afternoon in yellow and that's it.
Yeah, no, it was so determined. It was just all guts.
Alex Steeda, the historic bearer of the yellow jersey, and he came within 49 seconds of having his Tour de France end right here.
Water?
Oh, I can't feel my legs.
We just weren't organized. And I think lack of experience in the time trial really showed today.
We went from the pinnacle of the sport to the bottom of the pit today.
But you all made it home that day, and, you know, as high as you could get 1 minute, and then the, you know, the Tour de France, the reality kind of, it gave you a bit of a slap in the face, I suppose. I think the team finished 20th out of 21, but you're, again, you know, the team that won it, System U, I mean, some of the best riders in the world on that squad, and you were within 6 minutes or so. I mean, again, when you look at the distance, the time cut can't have been particularly generous, you know. So, yeah, it was a hard day's racing that, and I can see exactly why the riders didn't like split stages. puts too much strain on.
This message is brought to you by the Capital One Venture X card. Venture X offers the premium benefits you expect, like a $300 annual Capital One travel credit for less than you expect. Elevate your earn with unlimited double miles on every purchase, bringing you one step closer to your next dream destination. Plus, enjoy access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. The Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
You know, so the next day I found out that I could wear the polka dot jersey. So our team, we rallied together and they helped me try to get more polka dot points on the small hills leaving Paris. So I was able to wear that polka dot jersey for 5 days. So it was at one point I was sprinting for one of these intermediate hills for points, and I looked across and there's a guy with Rudy Project glasses with GDL on the side of the glasses. I was like, who the hell is this guy trying to get points from me? Oh, that was Gilbert Duclos-Lassalle. Oh, okay. Sorry. oh my gosh. But another in that first week, one of the seasoned pros, Jerry Kinnateman, came up to me in the race. You know, he'd ridden the Tour de France at that point 11 times, never won a stage, never had the yellow jersey, always there as a domestique, right? And he said to me, Alex, it's good that you have the yellow jersey, but you must show that you are worthy of the jersey by finishing the Tour de France. When Jerry said that to me, I took it to heart and I went, yeah, you're right. I got to show that I'm not just a one-hit wonder. I got to finish the Tour de France.
Alex Stida won the yellow leader's jersey on day two. And although he lost it the same day, he was the first North American to wear that jersey. And then last Sunday, Davis Finney from Boulder, Colorado, became the first American to win a Tour de France road race. And then there's Eric Heiden, who would like to add a successful finish to his five Olympic gold speed skating medals. But their tour hasn't been easy.
It's unbelievable how hard these races are. You know, there's all these guys that are going for it, and when they get out there, they work really hard.
It's about 50% faster, 200% longer, and 100% harder. So, there's nothing like it. It's unbelievable. It's really unbelievable.
We haven't got to the hard part yet.
No other words to describe it.
Fortunately, we didn't really have a GC guy that we had to work for and pull and, you know, pull back time and anything. We were just surviving every day. And that's what I did. I just focused on surviving every day. We went through the Pyrenees first that year. And when Jerry said, it's time for the autobus, I followed him. Yeah. You know, we were even having coffee in the stage in the morning, just like we were going to work. And he says, yeah, the first climb, we're going to lose 10 minutes on the descent and the flat. Between the climbs, we'll come back 5 minutes. Next climb, Périssoud will be harder, blah, blah, you know. He had it worked out so that by the time we got to the final climb on Super Bagnère, we had 20 minutes to make the time cut. I said, Jerry, I'm with you. All right, let's go. And I just followed him around like a puppy dog. And we did the Circle of Death that year too, you know, to finish on Alpe d'Huez. Mm-hmm. I distinctly remember we were coming down the descent in right before Alpe d'Huez. And I had been dropped on the previous climb. I think it was on Galibier with Alain Bondu. And then on the final descent before Alpe d'Huez, we were just doing turns and he said, okay, bon chance. And then we got to the bottom of Alpe d'Huez, and right away there was a phalanx of runners, people wearing like Speedos and running shoes, ready to push the French guy. And they took turns, like 200 meters pushing Alain. The next guy grabbed, started pushing, and the next guy. And boom, after the first hairpin, he was gone. I was like, poussez les Canadiens, poussez les Canadiens. No, they didn't push. No push. So I had to do the whole Alpe d'Huez on my own to make the time cut.
When the race hit the mountains, Olympic champion Alexei Graywall spent time at the front of the pack with the leaders, while his compatriots Chris Carmichael on the left and Doug Shapiro on the right suffered on the climbs with stomach viruses and eventually had to abandon the race. Even Graywall, who had stayed near the front, had enough of the race and those around trying to record it. Graywall was trying to finish each day's ordeal with a case of bronchitis, and it finally was just too painful. Chased and haunted by the ghoulish broom wagon that threatened to scoop him up, Alexei Graywall finally gave in and gave up on finishing the Tour de France.
I ended up finishing the tour that year, stayed away from crashes, did not get sick. Actually was getting stronger as the race went on. I was able to, you know, in the second to last day I was mixing it up in the final sprint. I think I was maybe 18th or so in that final, in the sprint for that sprint stage before we got the day before Champs-Élysées. But yeah, starting to feel stronger. I was really encouraged by that.
The American 7-Eleven team has made its mark this year, if at times struggling in the effort to do so.
Oh, just 5 more kilometers, you know, or just 10 more kilometers, or just to the next feed.
Swear to God, you can't make it to the top, but somehow you keep struggling over, and it's just one of those things where you got to survive. And the hills are really steep.
They wear the uniforms of professional bike racers in cycling's greatest race. But 1 month ago, they were just a bunch of kids training in Boulder, Colorado.
The party was over last night, man. some beer left over?
This is not your everyday Tour de France cycling team headquarters, but whatever works.
Hey, Bob, turn up the music.
And what about that group of guys? I mean, you mentioned Doug Shapiro, who passed away last year. I mean, have you over the years, do you feel like you all share a kind of special bond because of the experience you went through in 86?
Yeah, I mean, we're really like a band of brothers. We went through so much trial and tribulation, I'm just touching on some of the stories, like, and not just during the tour, you know, during, like I said, Tour de Sicilia, Paris-Nice, all these races we did for the first time together. If we didn't have each other, you know, we would have been lost because we were fighting against the tradition of the European peloton. And that really brought us closer together. We have a reunion every 5 years or so, try to get together and keep that spirit alive. We tell each other the same stories over and over again. Remember when? Yeah. The spirit of the team was really, really strong. Yeah. And it was really special, a really special time.
And I mean, from your point of view, did you feel like it was a one-hit wonder? I mean, what a hit to have, though.
Yeah, in some ways. I mean, as my career continued, I realized, you know, that I probably wasn't the best at racing in Europe. I didn't have the endurance over 200K. It was really hard. Fortunately, our sponsor, the 7-Eleven convenience store chain, had a big presence, of course, in the U.S., and they wanted us to have the team to have a presence in the U.S. So it was became apparent to me that in order to be, you know, a professional and stay in the sport, I needed to race where I could provide the most value to the team. So racing in North America was the best place for me. And, you know, I did a few races when the team needed an extra hand in Europe, but most of my racing, you know, continued on in North America, and I won quite a few races, stages of the Coors Classic, stages and overall for the Tour of Texas, and you know, there's criteriums I won three times in a row, you know, which was super fun, but it's not racing in Europe. Okay, fair enough, but it was definitely. Wouldn't want to have done it any other way.
And now, I mean, 40 years on, I mean, how do you feel about it? How do you must look back on it with an awful lot of pride, because although, you know, other Canadian riders have come along very shortly afterwards. I mean, Steve Bauer had the yellow jersey for a lot longer than you did, but there can only ever be one first.
Yeah, that's for sure. You know, definitely proud of the accomplishment and, you know, the team that helped me get there. You know, without Jim Aquitz believing in me and the other riders on the team, you know, supporting, wouldn't have been there. Without Shelley Versus, you know, as our female soigneur helping, you know, that spirit, you know, was simply amazing. Definitely look back with fondness. Racing as a professional cyclist taught me a lot, gave me a lot of strength, especially mental strength into my future life. You know, when you retire from professional cycling, especially then, we didn't have a lot of money to fall back on. So, you know, I had to reinvent myself. The lessons I learned about staying true, and when the chips are down, you still keep going and you put one foot in front of the other, not giving up. Now at 65, yeah, I'm retired now. Going to race individual pursuit at our Alberta Provincial Championships in August. We have a new velodrome here in Edmonton where I live, and I'm helping coach young athletes there, doing some riding myself, like I say, training for pursuit, just because it feels like the right thing to do.
And so it was yesterday that the Canadian, riding on America's team, became the first North American to wear the Golden Fleece. It was an outrageous move on Steeda's part, but one that certainly paid off. Only the third Canadian ever to ride in the Tour de France. It was a big day for Stida, who was in no hurry at all to leave the podium. And just as big a day for the world's press who were recording it.
And where is the yellow jersey skin suit?
Well, I have the podium jersey. I have it framed downstairs. But the yellow jersey skin suit is actually framed and was on display at my local cycling club, clubhouse in Edmonton, the Juventus Cycling Club, loosely affiliated with Juventus in Torino. But now that yellow jersey, framed yellow jersey skin suit is on display at the new velodrome.
This episode of Kilometre Zero by the Cycling Podcast was produced by Hugh Owen.
The Cycling Podcast was created in 2013 by Richard Moore, Daniel Freeb, and Lionel Burney.